Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the most downloaded fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump. Right, in today's episode, we answered listeners' questions, but this was after an intro portion. Today it was 58 or 59 minutes long. This is where we talk about fitness and current events and family life and you know, all kinds of fun stuff. You can check the show notes for timestamps if you want to just skip around your favorite parts. If you want to post a question that we can choose from for episodes like this one, go to Instagram at Mind Pump Media. Now, this episode is brought to you by one of our sponsors, Organifi. Today, you heard us talk about their Shilajit gummies. Shilajit is an Ayurvedic supplement that's been shown to improve hormone profiles, reduce stress, make people feel more energized. It's a great product. Go check them out. Also, if you buy any product right now from Organifi, you'll get 15 free green juice travel packs. The green juice is by far their most popular product. Anyway, go check them out. Go to Organifi.com/mindpump. Use the code mindpump. Get the 20% off plus the 15 free green juice travel packs. Also, there's 3 days left for our brand new MAPS program launch. MAPS Performance Advanced. This is not a beginner workout. This is a hardcore workout with an athletic bend to it. If you want to move like an athlete, you want to have a body like an athlete, you like to rotate, you want to be explosive, you want to be fast and strong, this is the program for you. So if you're interested, go check it out. Go to mapsp2.com. Use the code PALAUNCH. That gets you $80 off plus you get an ebook, Grip Strength Reference Guide, and another ebook, Eat for Performance. This sale ends March 3rd. All right, here comes the show. All right, look, this is unfortunate. We were going to be at the Arnold Classic. We were going to do an event there. Due to unforeseen circumstances, our venue canceled. So we are not able to go. We're not going to be there. We really apologize to anybody who was going there to come meet us. We hope to see you at the next event. But again, we apologize. We will not be there, unfortunately. Sorry. Strength training fanatics, if you are not focusing at least some of the time on developing power, the ability to use your strength with speed, you are not getting the best results. In fact, you're also increasing your risk of injury. One more thing, when developing power, fatigue is the enemy. In order to train for power, you have to avoid fatigue. But everybody should include some of that training in their workouts.
I don't like when you do fitness tips that make me feel guilty.
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. Like, of all the things that we talk about that I like.
It's a blind spot here. Huh?
It is. It's an area that I know that I have to continually revisit, and which is so funny because it was such a big part of my training growing up and even into my early 20s. Like, I always trained like a bit like an athlete or did some explosive stuff like that and changed multiple, did multiple directional type of movements explosively. Mm. And I always incorporated that. And then when I got on a kick of like bodybuilding and getting super strong, when that became so hyper-focused, yeah, that kind of stuff went to the wayside. And now I have to really be intentional about incorporating into my training or else it just doesn't find its way in there. And I think a lot of that has to do with, again, not playing basketball anymore, mm-hmm, and really needing that skill at the same level as I needed it before. But that's not the answer, is to throw it out completely. And I know that that's a challenge for me.
It's easy to overlook. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of those things that, especially for adults, like you get into all these responsibilities and work life and home life. And yeah, as kids, we could just go out and play. There's a lot more play, which expresses a lot of these types of movements where you're moving quickly, you're stopping quickly, you're changing directions quickly. But if you look at your patterns on a daily basis, you can just walk to work. You can just sit down. You can.
That's exactly it.
I mean, you can just go to the gym and everything's sort of like formed into like even the machines and everything. You're sitting down. You're kind of controlled with your output as opposed to really having to take into account if I move fast, can I stabilize that? And can I slow myself down appropriately so I don't injure myself?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. You don't realize how much of the skill of power you've lost because everyday life doesn't require power unless you drop something or you got to run real quick or you got to grab your kid because they're running into the street and then you hurt yourself.
Yep.
It's a trip to how you subconsciously prune these things, not even realizing. For example, like I shared that story like years ago of when I jumped out of the truck and I felt like my knees were going to explode.
All right.
And that was like one of the first times that like that was like a big aha moment for me. But now over time, and I don't even think about it anymore, something that for, I don't know, 26 years of my life would be the way I got out of the back of a truck. I never stepped out of the back of a truck. For 28 years of my life, if I got out of the back of a pickup truck, I jumped out of the back of a pickup truck. That was natural. Because of that moment and because of how much it shocked me, scared me. Now, subconsciously, I've caught myself. I was just climbing out of the back of my truck the other day. And I was like, I'm like stepping down. And I'm like, oh my God, like I wouldn't have done that just, 10 years ago.
Well, it is a skill and you'll lose it. Your body will get rid of that skill of strength with speed. So you can lift weights. You can be strong with your controlled movements and you'll be better off than if you had not done that. But if you don't do anything that exerts power or trains the skill of power, you lose it to such a degree that you'll go to jump off something that's not that high or, like I said, twist real quick because you got to grab your kid or something and injure yourself, hurt yourself as a result. Now, from a physique development standpoint, being able to master the skill or just work on the skill of power, it recruits incredible amounts of muscle fibers. This is an incredible way to amplify your muscle building ability with your traditional strength training exercises and or strength. Powerlifters understand this, by the way. The most successful powerlifting clubs include a dynamic effort or whatever type day where they're moving a lightweight with speed. Mm-hmm. And what they found is this contributes greatly to their low level, low grinding, kind of low gear type strength. They incorporate this in their training. Now, the problem I think is that people go, okay, well, how do I train for that? I don't know how to do a hang clean or a power clean or whatever. You can scale it back. You can regress power training like anything else. Like it could be as simple as jumping in place as high as you can, right? That could be one way of doing it where you're just trying to explode out of a squat or jumping or a elevated push-up where you push yourself up off a bench or where you use a band for a row and instead of pulling slow with control, you pull a little bit more explosively. Like you can regress back and train this skill. But the point that I also want to make with this is you don't train for power and look for a burn or look for a pump in the muscle. Right. There is no fatigue involved with developing power. Developing power is learning how to explode. Yeah. In other words, if you're doing a jump, you jump as hard as you can after you warm up and everything, right? You jump as high as you can, and then you wait until you feel like you can exert max power again, however long that takes, and then you do again. When people do this at the gym, they do not train for power. They're just, box jumping until they can't move anymore, in which case you're not developing power at all. You're just working on stamina.
So we're launching the MAPS Performance Advanced. When you were shooting that, Justin, what are some of your favorite movements that we've incorporated into that program that's unique to it?
We haven't done a lot of sprinting. We haven't done a lot of drills. We haven't done a lot of maybe more athletic focused skill training. Because it requires a lot more attention. And so with this program, the cool part is we've been able to develop with our first MAPS performance program, like what are the attributes of an athlete that they're seeking out? And so it was very much more strength focused, building that sort of foundational basis. But then if we take that sort of model and we have that foundation, like now how do we like improve very specific skills that will translate really well to a lot of different sports? Yeah. And so, you know, we tried to kind of look into what are some of those characteristics that are probably the most desired? And one of them, speed, which we're kind of talking about here in the beginning, which is we haven't really focused on speed and be able to move quickly, but also how do we deliberately program that so you can maximize the effect of that? And we sort of flipped the model on its head a bit. So with this, it's like you have your foundational workouts, but they're less frequent. And now our skills are very much more frequent. So it's the amount of frequency of being able to train those patterns so you get super effective with being explosive, being able to control your body under acceleration. So a lot of speed training is in there. And two, which was, you know, this was like a Hail Mary I threw up there to ask. We had Brian Kulo on the show, who's like just, I mean, we were all really impressed with his background and his philosophy. And he really highlights a lot of what you're talking about in terms of like eliminating fatigue within training. And he's great examples, Christian McCaffrey with that, and just how disciplined he is with his training. Every single rep he takes is very deliberate, very intentional. And then he stops before fatigue comes in and sort of convolutes that process with the body of learning how to move at that really explosive pace. Yep. So,
you know what I want to add to this, by the way, is that if you want to feel really good in your body, then train this appropriately. Being strong feels good. Being fit feels good. But if you want to take it to another level, having some speed, agility, and power, you feel so able-bodied. Like you super move
capable.
Capable, like you just, you know, you feel like a panther. Like I could hop up on this thing. I can move in this direction. I could go run with my kids, and it just, yeah. I feel capable in my body.
It's liberating.
It's the best feeling that I've ever had. When I trained more like an athlete back in my jiu-jitsu days, I remember feeling so secure in my body. Now I feel more like a big lumbering kind of whatever. But in those days, I just felt good. You know, everything just feels really good because my body can move slow and fast. It could be stable and agile. And this is a skill. If you don't train this, if your strength training is just traditional strength training all the time and you don't include any phases of this kind of training, little by little, this skill will you'll lose the skill to the point of where your body will maintain the absolute bare minimum that you require. Yeah. So you'll literally not be able to run or take off like when you need to run or jump off a curb and not feel like you might twist your ankle type of deal. Like that'll happen. And I've experienced that.
Would you say then like the outdoor field training, footwork, speed drills were your favorite or like the
Landmine University, and they've taken a lot of concepts from David Weck in terms of coiling. I was following them for a while. I remember somebody kind of tipped me off on what they were doing, and I just thought it was brilliant because there's certain things with like power cleans that like I love power cleans, and I like to be able to focus on that for like triple extension and for a lot of like, you know, explosive controlled power output for an exercise. But there is a bit of a learning curve to that. There's a bit of a risk to that. With the barbells and landmine training allows you to sort of place, I guess, I'm trying to the fulcrum of it. So in terms of like, you know, allowing less impact on the joints by kind of extending that lever out away. And so you're kind of, instead of like vertical gravitational forces, we're kind of allowing that to move out a bit and
take some of the risk out a little
takes,
bit.
Takes a lot of the
risk out.
Well,
the skill out. Of learning a landmine.
You also can do, like, to your David Weck point, which I love a lot of his work with that, is the coiling. Like you can do more coiling type of movements and exercises with the landmine that you wouldn't do traditionally with like a barbell.
Yeah. And so what we tried to do was highlight that in general. And this is another skill you're trying to develop with rotation. To be able to coil and to be able to tense up and to kind of create torque before movement, so you're more explosive. So, I mean, this is why we talked earlier about like Tiger Woods and like why he's so dominant with like his swing and how he can do it on his knees and even like outdrive people. Yeah. It's just because he's figured that out. Like, that's a skill. That's a definitive skill an athlete could benefit from, to be able to, you know, really, you know, explosively recruit and apply more power output with every movement.
Yeah.
So we did that in, you know, even with like some of the priming movements have matched with those specific skills that we're trying to focus on. But yeah, so it's really unique. Let's put it that way. A lot of really unique concepts in this program that we're able to kind of peer and zoom in a bit more. That will apply directly towards a sport that also, like, your everyday average person, like, you're just not considering these things because, again, you're just getting up out of your car, you're going to work, you're kind of doing your thing. This really exposes a lot of other potential.
It's so bittersweet for me when we do programs like this or we even talk about this stuff, because I didn't have any of this knowledge as a kid training at all. I wish... I made it through sports with the tiny fraction of information and knowledge around training and diet, which is like was pretty much none, and was okay. You know, I wasn't a great athlete, but I was okay. But I was also the athlete that, man, because I didn't have a lot of natural gifts, I worked hard. And if I had the resources or the tools or the knowledge that we have now when it comes to training like an athlete, God, I really wish what I might have been able to have done, you know, as a young athlete who would put the work in.
Would have squeezed so much more out of you and your potential.
Well, especially when, and we talked about this the other day on the podcast about, you know, when you're at the like high school level, which is as far as I made it, right? I was just playing in high school. It's one thing to be a great shooter in basketball or to have great handles with that, but your athletic abilities trumps that. At that level, if you are just that much faster, that much more explosive, you can accelerate, decelerate, jump higher than all of your peers. Even if you're not the greatest shooter, the greatest ball handler, you're like the best player on the team because of that. And I wish I had those tools to have been able to apply that, because I think my work ethic would have allowed me to surpass a lot of people because I was definitely not better than the people that had those natural gifts already, and I was just relying a little bit on my hard work and effort to try and keep up, and I didn't have this like science-based approach of training to get me better. Well, I wish I had that.
I wish I knew this as an early trainer. I didn't know any of this even as an early trainer. Yeah. I knew strength training, correctional exercise. No real understand functional training to me back then was balancing on things, like, you know, no matter what workout exercise we're doing, if you're balancing
one
on
leg and
it's functional. I had no idea until the later half of my career, and when I started applying it to myself, so I wanted to learn through that, and then I saw the value with using this with clients, and I would scale things down and apply a little bit. Like, I remember with my elderly clients, having them just practice, like, just jumping in place without even a full squat, and then them seeing the carryover to the other lifts, the other workouts, and then their just overall function. I mean, you could scale it way back. It could be as simple as like throwing a light, you know, medicine ball even would help develop the power.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't realize what it does to the body and how it develops it. I remember when I did hang clean, there was a stint I did hang cleans for a while. And my goal, I don't remember what my goal was. I wanted to get up to 2. I don't remember what it was, something with a hang clean. And the idea was to get me better at throws for judo and jiu-jitsu. And then I remember developing like bigger traps. I didn't expect that. I didn't expect to get muscle development for it.
I think a lot of people don't consider fast twitch contraction in general. And like that's like a whole ocean of potential on its own of just moving quickly stimulates the muscle in a completely different
way. It's the difference between being a powerful tractor and being a drag car. They both have a lot of horsepower. Okay. They look very different. Like a tractor is slow and they can pull a lot of weight, but a drag car, that thing takes off and it's explosive. It's scary, right? That's a skill that you have to train or you will lose. And if you lose enough of it, it will compromise your ability to be strong, to develop muscle, to be fit, it'll compromise all that stuff. So you could literally be a fit, muscular, older person who has trouble with, you know, doing a jumping jack because it feels jarring on the body because you don't have that, that
skill. I do think, though, it's important to note that the Justin said this, right, about the original MAPS performance was about laying that foundation of strength. Like, that does come first, right?
Of course.
Speed and power is, like, the greatest,
you have to have strength.
Is the greatest expression of strength. And so I think the mistake that a lot of, like, newbies or general pop people make is wanting to be, look like, you know, said athlete. And so therefore they train, you know, all these athletic, you know, movements, and they don't have a solid foundation first. And so it's important that you lay that foundation first before you try and get the greatest expression of it.
Of all of the of the workout modalities that exist, of all of the ways of working out, and they're all bastardized in popular media. Like, most workout plans, programs, and in mainstream media, from a trainer perspective, from a coach perspective, people that understand workouts, they suck. Okay. But nothing has been more bastardized than power training. Nothing. If you look at mainstream workouts, do you know where you see people attempt power training? In cardio class, workout, get lean, targeting women type classes. That's where you see jump boxes and shit like that. But it's so bastardized that it's literally a, they can do whatever they want. It doesn't even matter the exercise. It's all about sweating and getting tired. The only time you see power exercises being performed in these, you know, mainstream, like I said, workout gyms and facilities and on, you know, on the internet, whatever, is for crap like that. Mm-hmm. Nobody does power training properly unless you're looking at a coach training an athlete and they know what they're doing. So this has yet to even go mainstream, but when it does, it's going to be amazing. Then you're going to really see people really take things to another level.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen this firsthand, training high school athletes, and just what a difference it is when you remove the fatigue element as you train, and then you apply that out on the field. And their output is so much greater, and their movement is so much sharper, because it's been so much, the focus has been very deliberate. And the body responds to how you train it. And so it doesn't make any sense to me to keep training it to, when you're under fatigue, you lose a lot of control.
Yep.
And so, yes, there's time to stress these movements under fatigue. Obviously, that's under competition. But I'm just under the camp now, even more so, that training that without fatigue, it leads to such a better result for an athlete.
Well, I know that this is part of, you know, your bone you have to pick with CrossFit and, you know, UFC, MMA type of training, because there's a lot of young athletes that have now adopted that way of training for mm-hmm. football and sports in general. And it's like, it's such a terrible way. And they may not think it's terrible because they get stamina mm-hmm. from it, and they build a little bit of strength. And so they're better off have done that than nothing at all. But it's like, man, there is such a better approach.
It's like watching a bunch of people hammer nails with a screwdriver. But it works. I got the nail in the wall. It's like, you have no idea. There's a way better way to do this.
I know. And it's really not, it's not mainstream. It's not like taught barely in any other coaching. Like, I just haven't seen any other schools really. That was why, like, Brian Kuhl, I thought it was, I was like, wow, finally somebody that's voicing this and is applying it and has been doing this since day one. Yeah. It was mind blowing to me because that's kind of how I always saw it.
Speaking of like the progression of all this. So I've been, I'm putting a specific focus on starting to develop some agility, but I have to focus on lateral stability and strength first because I lack that. Okay. Big time. Cause I love deadlifting. I love squatting. I love those, you know, those basic movements. So I'm like, I've identified this, like my lateral stability isn't great. So I've had to regress. So you catch me at the gym right now doing the abductor. That's to start. I literally am on the abductor machine.
Good girl, bad girls?
And I'm in there, and it's like as regressed as it can get because I need to build a little bit of strength. And then next I'm going to start doing stuff on the field. But I'm, you know, on the inner field of the gym, not outside field. Don't get carried away. But I'm at the gym working out, and the gym that I go to over here, UFC Fit, I get recognized at least two or three times when I'm in there. So this is also an ego check. So I'm like, I put my headphones on.
Do you even think
I'm doing the machine? You know,
do you even think that's an appropriate regression for that. Like, I don't even know if I would even start.
I mean,
you
I also do tube walks. I also do, but because it's so easy and I can work on end range of motion, which is a challenge for me. So for me, what ends up happening is when I come out, I all of a sudden lack strength. So the machine is so controlled. And this is just, I'm only going to do this for a couple of weeks, just kind of get that contraction out there to connect. I found I can connect to it a little bit better. And then I'm going to move on to some other stuff. But, yeah. You know,
I just feel like that's the most worthless machine in the gym. It's like, yeah. I just think that even for functional purposes, I feel like there, I would do something with your body. That's not in a machine to, especially when
got weird real quick,
huh?
You got nervous.
No, I just, I mean, I, Justin, would you, is that you would, I would never regress to the,
machine. He mentioned he was doing like lateral sled drags and things like that. I mean, I would definitely have a movement aspect to it. Laterally,
especially first, if the desired outcome was a
there's a lack of strength that does
athletic pursuit.
No, it's literally I got to connect to this for a second, get a little bit of a pump. This is super controlled, super like I can just do this to try and feel what I'm trying to feel and then apply it.
I'm so going to send the video guys there to catch video. Never let you live that.
That's how it starts.
I do the whole stack. The whole stack, bro. I don't even, I'm going to do the stack. You know?
Yeah.
No, but I'm looking around like, please don't let anybody recognize me.
Just don't make eye contact. That's the rule.
I hope somebody captures it.
Oh, it's embarrassing. Yeah. Also, I do want to say this, We've prophesized a few things here on the podcast. This one is just, it's becoming so obvious and so true now. It's gotta be at least probably early days, 9 years ago, 8 years ago, where we talked about the health and longevity benefits of creatine. And back then we actually got mocked. I remember people talking about, oh, it's a bodybuilder supplement.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Driven
supplement. It just builds muscle or whatever. I tell you what, dude, the wellness space, the neuro health space, the longevity space, creatine is becoming the hot supplement all of a sudden.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, dude. And we were saying that a long time ago.
Do you remember we actually it was the original studio.
Yep.
When we actually got samples of just pure monohydrate in a brown bag. Remember that was going to be what we were going to do. Yeah. We were going to
that was the inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We wanted to do like a recyclable bag and it'd be just plain old creatine monohydrate, mm-hmm. nothing special about it. And just branded. And we actually got samples and we're looking at
I forgot about that.
Uh-huh. That was,
I did have a chance at a supplement.
I mean, still to this day, it's probably the only one you could convince me to want to mess with because of the simplicity of it, how easy it would be to source, to do all those things. The downfall of it for our business is that it's just the margins are so terrible.
Terrible, yeah. We're probably a few years away, I'd say five at the most, away from creatine becoming like ultra mainstream. Everybody's got to take it.
Yeah.
It's good for longevity, good for your brain, good for your organs.
I feel like it's getting
like multivitamin status.
I'm telling you, it is. People are tagging me all the time now because I've been preaching this forever and they're tagging me and going, oh, this person said that. They're just a neuroscientist. Oh, and this person said it. They're a cardiologist. And this person said it. It's blown up. What's that, Doug?
This is a chart that shows the Google trends of how often creatine has been searched in the last 10 years.
Oh, so wow. Where's that spike right there?
The spike is in 2022.
Yeah, so look at that.
2021, basically after 2020.
Yeah.
Yep. Interesting, what that massive spike right there.
That's because that's when the longevity people were started talking about it.
Like literally you can pinpoint that date that's like...
When, I don't know about that date, but I know that it's relatively recent.
That's a massive spike. Look at the line, like relatively...
Yeah, stable.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden it has the one of the greatest spikes in its history.
And it's staying up there kind of.
Yeah. Interesting.
What's that exact date there, that big spike?
11/22?
It's in January.
Oh, January.
January of what?
2022.
Interesting.
Oh, remember on that episode I said that?
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that interesting? I find that really, I find that super interesting. I mean, you're talking about almost, it's more than double, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's cool. You can look that up.
More than double.
Huh.
So many cool things on the internet. I mean, it's going to be put in multivitamins.
I think it already is. I think some people are.
Oh, it'll be in all multivitamins. Yeah. It's going to be in
cereals,
in care homes. Yeah. You're going to see like care homes, especially the elderly. You're going to see doctors recommending it for surgery recovery. to help the body heal. It's going to be skincare. You can see people using it in skincare because creatine produces ATP, which is in every cell. Every cell needs that energy.
I wonder what percentage of the population after all is said and done, maybe it's like a year or two after the pandemic, like literally started to start doing their own research because they're so frustrated.
That's probably
medical advice. Yeah. Like, this is not working. This dietary guidelines not working.
Yeah,
you know, dude, all these medications not working. You know, what else is there? And then, you know, hopefully they found some information out there that was a little better.
Yeah, dude. Speaking of the pandemic and stuff, I just read an article. 3 out of every 1,000 people with COVID will have COVID for a month or longer. And so, and I'm reading the comments and I'm just, there's a split between people who are like making fun of the vaccination. Other people are like, do I need to get a booster type of deal? But what these people don't realize is it's almost certainly connected to low vitamin D levels. Mm-hmm. Almost certainly, if your vitamin D levels are low and you get a viral infection, your mm-hmm. odds of having a long fight are far higher.
Which, I mean, what's already the percentage of that? I know magnesium is like 65% plus of the population are deficient.
Well, optimal
in that.
Vitamin D is a lot, but low is, I don't know what percentage it would be.
Susceptible, yeah.
I don't know. But if you're low, you don't want to get any viral infection, especially a respiratory one. It's going to be you're going to be in for a long haul. It's not going to be. Yeah. By the way, low vitamin D, you know, just because you're out in the sun a lot, I'll use my dad as an example. I talked about this already. My dad's always outside. He hates being indoors. He's always outside. But because we have dark skin, we don't convert as much of the sunlight to vitamin D.
Well, I also have a theory about that too. It's what I've said about me is like, if you were somebody who was out in the sunlight a lot so much, your body is adapted
maybe
to
changed
that.
To how
and so just you being not as much is a, what is it?
Wow, I didn't even realize that was that bad.
I knew it was high.
Yeah, 42% of adults are deficient.
Yeah. I exaggerated and said 50.
Doug, do me a
which
favor.
I don't know what guidelines are using for vitamin D because RDA is low.
It's not good.
Yeah.
Doug,
yeah,
look it's not up, optimal.
Look up vitamin D deficiency symptoms. Trip off this because I want
it's
people.
Like everything.
Well, no,
it's like,
I want people to hear this because.
Yeah. Energy, skin, recovery. Like,
well, no, there's some up there that people might not realize. I've had clients like this where they were on medications, muscle pain, bone pain, increased sensitivity to pain. Tingly, pins and needles, sensations, hands or feet, muscle weakness,
interesting.
Waddling while walking.
Tingly,
waddling.
Yeah, and then what it doesn't say in that one is also depression and anxiety. Depression, anxiety.
So is the ultimate extreme, what's rickets the deficiency of?
That is vitamin D.
That is vitamin D, right? Yeah, okay.
If I'm not mistaken. Rickets. That's like an old disease. Doug, what's rickets?
Is that the shake like they shake?
I think it's bone, weak bones. Huh?
Like bowed legs, I believe.
Doug, look up rickets.
Yeah, look it up because I think it's.
I thought it was like when you
it's Northern European country.
No, it's when your bones are malformed, I think, from lack of vitamin D.
Oh, wow.
The softening and weakening of bones in children.
I did not know that.
Bro, there's some old diseases out there that people don't get anymore, like the mumps.
Oh yeah, mumps.
So people don't get. There's nobody you know that gets rickets anymore.
That's pretty rare.
Scurvy, you know, the old pirate one.
Yeah, it's pretty rare for somebody to get rickets.
I'd imagine that we'd probably because we would see the signs early on now and then be able to supplement way early before.
They put it in formula. If you breastfeed, they tell you to supplement to give it to your kids. Mm-hmm. Like we were told by a general doctor to give our kids vitamin D to supplement, but it's in formula and in milk specifically for this reason.
Mm. Yeah. So these are the. You know, the deformities, thickening of ankles, wrists, knees, bowed legs, soft skull bones, rarely bending of the spine, dental problems, things like that.
Wow. So, nice.
Yeah. That's not good.
Nope. You definitely don't want the rickets. So, Doug, Justin, I want to hear this because it's been in our notes for a little while, and I guarantee you this was something you put in the notes.
what is
it? Because no way in hell Adam put this there.
Yeah.
What is Shia LaBeouf in cannibalism? What the hell?
Dude.
Shia LaBeouf, right?
Shia LaBeouf.
You guys know who he is.
Yeah,
actor.
Yeah.
So there was this choir that did a video that they made this whole like song about it's the actual cannibal Shia LaBeouf. And it was just the most bizarre video I've ever seen. I just was trying to bring it up and I didn't know where to throw in conversation, obviously.
So he wasn't a cannibal. He didn't actually eat
something. No, it was like they made it and it's this performance and it's just one of those like you're kind of showing your friends like weird videos, and like this made no sense, but it also was like, it was like a good song, but it was like a very random, I don't know. Like, I just thought it was weird.
Oh, now I want to watch this.
And crazy.
Doug's pulling it up right now.
And Shia LaBeouf actually shows up at the end of it too, which was like, it felt like they're like making fun of him in this whole like music.
Yeah.
The ensemble.
So he was a part of it.
He was a part of it. He was in on the goof.
So I'm
is it old? Oh yeah. 2014.
Yeah, it's old. I'm not sure if this, oh yeah.
This is it.
2014.
Huh?
This is the video here. Yeah.
I wanted to expose you guys to it, I guess, audience. Like, this exists.
Back up for a second. Said the gay men's what?
Yeah, hold on. Now I know why Justin was watching. Can we back up for a second?
Justin Googles.
My friend showed YouTube. Me this. I blame him.
I bet he did.
Videos of gay men. This is what I got.
Justin, my friend.
Yeah.
I can't
hear it. Want to play it? Here goes.
Yeah.
He's gaming on you. You're looking for your car, but you're all turned around. He's almost upon you now, and you can see there's blood on his face. My God, there's blood everywhere. Running for your life from Shia LaBeouf.
This is such like a stoner video.
Like, how do you get all these people together to make something so ridiculous as
that?
My mind was just running,
trying to figure it out.
Like, the amount of people paid to come do this, $84 million views.
Do you realize how close Justin was being to a theater?
Yeah,
a theater
100%.
Nerd? Like, he decided
football. Just barely made it out
I believe when him, and his buddy, when him and his buddies get together and they do these things, this is the type of stuff they reenact.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or they try and come up with their own. You know what I'm saying? Like, 100%.
It's funny, yeah, I'm in.
I just, that is crazy. Like, how does something like that even get created? Like, you're not going to spin it off into some sort of business, right?
Oh, yeah, 84 million views.
I mean, that happened, right? But right. Do you really go in it going like, hey, we're going to do this and it's going to get 84 million views? Know. And that's going to pay for all these people?
It's so random. It's so obscure. I think it's just so compelling that way. You know?
By
it's
the way, like, what? Shia LaBeouf. So I've been interested in him recently because you guys know his story.
Yeah, about right? Catholicism and stuff like that.
We might have talked about this, but he was going to play Padre Pio, went and lived with the monks, and he's like hardcore now. Yeah,
he's
hardcore
like the
Catholic.
old school stuff, whatever
he watches
called.
The Latin he was a Latin mass, and he's like super converted and everything. Yeah. Pretty wild story. Mm-hmm. But anyway,
that's trippy.
Yeah, yeah, so
he went from
so you're welcome. Yeah, that's a random video for you guys.
Thank
to
you
enjoy.
So much, Justin.
See, when I see that, that's so what gets my wheels turning is like, I want to know the history of that. Like, I want to know like how that came to be and whose idea was it and why did they do it? What was the desired outcome of it? Like, I can't watch something like that just be entertaining and laugh about it. I go like, okay, wait a second. Like, who creates this for what reasons? Like, what are you thinking when you do that? Like, you just,
I'm attracted to weird content.
Yeah. Or is it just like you got that kind of money where you're just like, hey, fucking, let's just spend $10,000 on people.
I want to be with you guys one day. We're all just hanging around and we're like, this is, what you guys
want to
do?
Let's just make a really obscure
video. So, cool video.
So that Robin Big was one of my all time favorite shows because of that. Like, I used to always say like, oh man, if I'm ever that rich, that's how I'm going to like blow my money. It's like just doing
cool shit.
Yeah. Weird shit.
What
like
would you
that.
Do? What would be one of the first things you did? Let's say you get so much money, it doesn't matter. And but you have to come up with some random idea.
I feel like you're going to learn how to race some kind of crazy car.
Yeah, I would do stuff like that for sure.
I want to see you on the pro go-kart racing circuit.
Stupid. I mean, that's how they all start, right? You start off in the go-karts, and then a lot of them do those like mini trucks.
Those go-karts are fast, by the way, the high-level ones.
Oh, yeah. And you're so close to the ground.
That's
it feels
terrifying.
Faster. Yeah. Than, yeah. I did. I mean, my uncle had one when I was little, and so I did drive. Yeah, I would do so. You know, that you're talking about when I was in my 20s, I thought that way. And I mean, now I have the capability to do all these ridiculous things, and I choose not to do it. Right. So I'm not. I think that's when you're that age. I'm into that stuff.
Is there a skill you'd want to learn? Either one of you guys, a skill that you would, if you had the time, like if you had all the time, would
jiu-jitsu?
You? Okay.
Yeah, I would do it, but I would do it quietly because I feel like everybody does it, and I don't like. I hate that. That's part of why I don't do it right now.
Because everybody does.
Because everybody does it, but yet I really want to do it, so I'm torn.
You should go do another grappling art that's not like a little more obscure, like Russian. Song
so or. I would or boxing. I would love to box. I would love to, I don't even have to get in the ring and do rounds and stuff like that. As much as the skill of it, the skill of being able to throw a punch really efficiently is such a valuable skill.
Oh yeah, it is.
Yeah. So I think that between that and jiu-jitsu, I think would be one of the coolest things. Obviously, I think jiu-jitsu is one of the best because every fight I've ever been in my life always ends up on the ground.
Yeah.
And so having the skill to be able to defend yourself or put somebody in a choke or a hold, it's much bigger than you. I think jiu-jitsu would be better. But boxing too, though, like it may not even end up on the ground if I got really good hands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and my length. Like, so if I got that kind of skill, even if you were great at jiu-jitsu, it might be able to put you down before you even get me to the ground. Yeah. So I think those two would be
I'd
cool.
like to learn scuba diving.
Scuba? You liar. I brought that up.
Because I'm terrified of it.
Oh, I was going to say. You're such a liar. I wanted to do that.
No.
When I lived out in Monterey,
I would like to. You know what I'm saying?
So these are things we would never do. Yeah. But we would
want. I mean, if I had all the time and energy, then I would because I could constantly, you know what I mean? Because it would be too exhausting for me now. It would take too much time and it terrifies me.
Yeah.
But if I had nothing else to do, I could dedicate like, okay. This is a personal growth thing.
Yeah.
I got to get in the open ocean. And
I don't know if I believe this.
I'm telling you.
I brought this up like it was a few years ago. I wanted us to do that. I don't remember what it was. I think for.
Were you in a shark cage?
No. God, one step at a time, bro. Okay.
In a pool, right? Yeah. You're starting a pool.
Trying to get a feel for
but
it.
But I want to overcome that fear. You know what I mean? I feel like that's so scary. Like you're in the ocean. Mm-hmm. You look around.
So it's more like that for you. It's not so much that you like.
It would feel so empowering that
to
I
overcome
did that.
That.
Yeah, dude.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a different ask, I think. I think asking me like what's something that I fear I don't like doing that I'd try and what like would love to challenge myself to overcome it would be a different thought process. Saying what would I want to train or skill?
Well, do you have a different answer then?
Well, I would have to think about it because I don't. There's not a lot of things.
You're not scared of anything?
Yeah, I'm not really scared of a lot of things actually.
Except movies.
Well, hey, no, I mean, I'm sure there is something, right? But I try and operate from a place of running towards fear, right? Because on the other side of that resides success, and so I'm a big believer of.
All right, Jim Quick.
If I'm, I didn't Jim Quick that. That's the fucking direction.
That's the actual.
That's
quote.
The actual direction of the.
Well,
quote.
You know what's on the other side of success?
Not overcoming the fear. It's fearing the overcoming
it, right there. Dude. I said the quote the way it was. I think that's a big part of life is finding those things and finding purpose in life is to find those things that we're most afraid of, we're most challenged and running.
I feel like I would be so much of a better person if I got over that fear. What about you, Justin? Do you have one?
Well, too. I mean, it's this is more on the artistic side. So I'm not like, you know, physically, yes, I have similar kind of stuff. Like I'd love to learn, more combat kind of focused skills, but I want to learn how to like produce music and like get more in like the back end recording side of it and learn how to like
so what does a music producer do? So are they the ones that they take all the different artists and then they take the tracks and they make it
They blend it all together, they add sounds
that's
and they,
the dude in the other just, room with the buttons
yeah
that you see on TV. Okay.
I mean Dr.
Dre.
Like, I just thought that would be really interesting because I'm not like the best musician but I definitely have an ear for things, and so if I hear something I'm like, ooh, something would go well with this. Mm-hmm. And like I was sort of meddling with my son's DJ table and too, because I got that for him, and really it was like because I kind of wanted to play with it.
I love that. Like, you buy your kid what you want.
I want to kind of learn drums, like I don't want to get like super good at like one specific instrument. I just know that's, I don't know.
That would be cool.
I would just like to kind of blend it all together and pull people in.
I would do that.
Really good.
We could do Mind Pump Music Productions, a supplement company for me, and then you wanted to open an ice cream shop, what you said that one time.
Oh, that's right.
That's true, by the way.
Yeah,
I'm not making this up. Adam, literally, I'm always like, I want to do supplements.
The yogurt shop. Yogurt
I want to do supplements, right?
And snow cone.
And he's like, I want to do a frozen yogurt.
Frozen yogurt and snow cone. Snow cones from Hawaii.
So weird.
If you've ever had shaved ice in Hawaii, it's like nowhere else in the world. So shaved ice with / yogurt shop crushes. Someone will do that. Someone will steal my idea. What do you guys?
I think they exist.
Somebody's done it. Someone's got it done. It. I haven't seen one, not with that kind of shaved ice and not like good.
Why is it that we can't find Hawaiian shaved ice around here?
You can't.
What do they got? What are they using?
It's just not as good.
Is it a special machine?
Yeah, it's a special machine.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a special machine that I'm sure there is some. We're not all probably big snow cone guys going around looking for the best snow cone shop.
I would get it, dude. When I'm in Hawaii, I
think that place that down on Lincoln in Willow Glen, I think they do. I've never actually had it, but that's the one that has lines out the door for it.
Because every time I get a snow cone here, it's just a fucking ice cube. with like sugar on it.
It was terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what? Okay. What do you guys want to be remembered for?
Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
Like what do you want to be remembered
legacy
for? Yeah. Yeah. Like when people talk, well, you've been long dead, or you don't have to be long dead. You've been gone for a while or something like that, and people remember talk about you. Like, what do you want to be remembered for? You ever think about that?
Yeah, I do.
Obviously, I think about that with my son and stuff like that. So that's, I don't think, I never thought about those types of things before until him. And then that stuff pops in my head every now and then. And I think about that. So have you ever thought about
what is yours? Why don't you start? Because I got to think about that.
Two things come to mind for me. One, for sure, being a great father. Mm-hmm. Like of all the things that would be
good job. You're
the there. Number yeah. one. Yeah, but really though, I appreciate that you feel that way because you know me and you would mm-hmm. say that. But I want to be known for that. Oh my god,
famous for it.
Yeah, like that's almost like that. Almost wow. like yeah, like that. That's. I mean, look, we have a platform where millions of people know oh, wow. who we are.
Okay.
What I want them to know about me, number one, is that I'm a great father. That would be the same. And then probably my second one is my business acumen, because mm-hmm. that's something that I care more about that than being a good trainer. Mm. A lot of people think that, like, it used to be funny to me when people like jab at me with like trainer stuff. I was like, I don't even care. You know what I'm saying? It's not even like, cool. You think you're smarter or better than me. That's not a thing I really care about. Like, I happen to have fallen into that profession. I love it, but I take more pride in on the business acumen side. And so father one, and then business acumen would probably be
oh, wow.
a close second.
Yeah, I don't know.
I have kind of a funny one, because it's literally the last award you want to get when you're like done with your team. At the end of the year, you get like MVP, or you get like defensive player of the year. Or like
what do you want to best
most improved?
One? Most improved.
Oh,
yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. And mainly because in terms of like seeing growth.
So
in
when you die, you want people,
directions.
You want people to be like, he sucked.
But
man, he sucked.
He got way better.
Look what happened. He kept fucking like getting after it, getting better.
The little
better,
train
better.
That could. It's,
his name, Justin
That's
Andrews.
It. That's
got,
it.
Got better.
Yeah. He's dead. He's even getting better at being dead. Yeah, you know, like that's what I want. Like, I'm just somehow.
This guy's so most improved. He's probably getting better right now.
So most improved. Yeah, you guys are still talking about me, you know, as I'm dead.
That's awesome.
I like that one. What about you, Doug? You think about that? I mean, you're closer to that, so you got to.
Are you sure?
No, probably you're right. Not, I'm not. I'm not sure. That's actually.
I'm not the
He's
one breaking all the Celsius.
Whole company, bro. At some point,
like, I don't give a lot of thought to what happens after I die, other than making sure that I leave behind, things for my daughter.
Yeah,
but you know, in life,
yeah.
I concern myself more with what I'm doing right now.
Yeah,
and like you, being a great father is definitely top of the list. Kind of an obscure thing, though, outside of that, is I've taken up calligraphy, Japanese calligraphy, a while back, and I'm very serious about it.
Oh, wow.
I've been taking classes. I've been practicing.
I've seen it. I've seen some of your stuff.
And I keep getting better, and I do think I have some innate abilities with it, because I've gotten a lot of comments from actual older Japanese people in these classes, and they're saying, how long have you been doing this?
Great.
I follow some Japanese and Chinese calligraphers on Instagram, and I really admire some of their work, and I would like to be known for that. Somebody like this white guy who shouldn't be doing that, but
you
is doing
Eminem
it.
Of calligraphy.
I'm the Eminem of calligraphy.
Can we put that in your bio on
Instagram? I like it.
The Eminem of calligraphy.
That's probably the best title I've heard.
I didn't even, you know what? That's actually really interesting to me that there is such an art to that.
Oh, bro, you have no idea. I went over his house and he was showing me.
That somebody could look at it and go like, oh, wow, you've been practicing this a really long time.
Bro, you
got to
see the brush. Yeah. He was showing me all this. The brushes, the way you
I know
place
there's
it
like
and
a super-
lift it off the paper and the way you stroke. Like it's a 100% art.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's kind of cool.
It's a little embarrassing, actually, for me to talk about.
Why?
Because it's kind of nerdy, but I guess we're all kind of nerdy.
We've already been labeled. My wife has already labeled all of us as that.
And by the way, I'm at an age now where nerdiness doesn't really matter.
You're just cool.
It's hot now. It's not cool when you're 17.
I don't know about
I've
that.
Come out about my Dungeons and Dragons.
That will never be hot.
You still play that?
No, I don't, but I would.
I like that, Doug. That's super original. That's going to be tough for Sal to come with something better than that.
Yeah. I'm not nerdy. Does your wife say I'm nerdy too?
Yes.
Me?
Yeah. You.
No, I'm just kidding, bro. I'm just kidding. I think, of course, being a great father would be a great one, but I would like to be known for being generous and for communicating communicating the truth when the truth is not popular. That's what I would like to be known.
Mm.
You know?
How lame. None of us are having to do with fitness, but that's what we do for a living.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Well, no, you don't want to be known as like the philosopher of fitness or like one of the most, you know, well-known fitness minds.
Warrior
in
poet. Like,
you don't care about that?
The warrior poet?
Please don't say that, dude.
I'm gonna punch I like you that title.
No, dude. That's
for you.
That's my bizarro version.
You, so you don't, you don't have something like that related to that?
No, I mean, no, I think communicating things that are right, but not popular could fall in that category too. But I would, you know, I value that. I value that anyway. You know, I always find people that I've always been this way. I've always seen people who were persecuted for speaking out and being the truth. And I've always felt a strong pull towards them, mm-hmm. like, and respect, you know, mm-hmm. like, and I'll give you an example. I remember learning about Muhammad Ali as a kid. There was a stint there where I was into like classic boxing. And I remember learning that Muhammad Ali, he opposed the Vietnam War, refused to go. So whatever you feel about that, he gave up his prime best years of boxing because of it. Yeah. They didn't allow him to box and he almost got thrown into jail because he believed in something so much that he said, no, I'm going to take a stand.
Yeah.
That's always pulled to me, you know? Yeah.
I guess there's some of that in what we do for sure, right? Yeah. Obviously, we're standing up against what a lot of people, yeah. a lot of the norms in the space.
Yeah, and we're not getting persecuted.
Well, we're not getting persecuted. Not yet. Yeah, but you know what though? I mean, I brought this up yesterday when we were talking to Jason Khalipa. I mean, obviously, we're not being persecuted for it, and so it's okay. But we do pass on a lot of money to do things with integrity, opposed to just chasing. I mean, listen, when you're scaling a business. The amount of money and revenue you make is the ultimate scoreboard. I mean, that right. is, you're winning the game. That's really what it is at the end of the day. I mean, that's what it is. And so we sacrifice that a lot for things that pursuing things that we care about or we believe is right.
Yeah.
And we don't do things that we know. And so, yeah, we're not getting thrown in the gulags or some shit over what we do. But no. Hey, this is
the anti-protein police are going to come.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I think we operate from a place like that. Yeah. You know,
I was that kid that was like when the bully, you know, in elementary school is bullying a table, like a lunch, you know, table, nobody say whatever. And I'd be the one sitting there quietly, and then it would just eat at me. So I'd say something, and then I'd get in a scuffle or I'd get jumped.
Oh, that's a cool thing to be known for. Is like the defender of the weak.
I or could defender not. Of the, it of just the, doesn't sit. I would much rather deal with the ass whooping by the bully.
Yeah.
Than sitting there.
Same.
And being quiet. It just ate at me all the time, and so yeah, I used to get in trouble a lot. For stuff like that. Because I had a big mouth. That was my nickname, Big Mouth.
You just reminded me of something. So yeah, my son is getting at this really cool. We're now at this point where I can just keep asking questions and challenging and he'll just talk.
Oh, it's so fun.
And so yesterday we're in the bath and we're talking and I'm talking to him about all the kids at his school and who he likes, who he plays with, and it got around to like the kid that's like that's mean or the bully or what that. And I said, any kids that are mean or not nice with that? And he goes, Buster. And I'm like, oh, who's Buster like that? And he goes,
Are you changing the name for the podcast, or is this his real name?
Yes, I think it's his real name. Oh, I think God. It was
Buster.
Buster.
Well, that's a dead giveaway.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oops. Your kid Buster.
Oops.
Yeah. Maybe. Hey, your kid's a shitty kid. I don't care. You know what I'm saying? Oh my God. Be better parents. The best part of this. The best part about
Buster's
this.
Parents are yeah. come
hey,
to
the best part about this was that already the training, and it was. I haven't even said it that much. I've said it to you guys, but I have said it to him before. And Katrina and I have kind of lightly talked about it before that I've told her I'm going to teach him this way. And he says it. I don't even say anything to him. He goes, yeah, his mommy and daddy don't love him very much. I went, oh my God. I said, yes, dude. Yes. That's exactly how I want my son to interpret kids that are shits, that are bullies, that are bad people.
Yeah, they have a bad home life.
Yeah. They said, I teach him to not be mean and to have empathy, to be like, hey, you know, unfortunately he doesn't have a mommy and daddy that probably loves him as much as your mom and dad love you. And mm-hmm. so you just have to understand that inside he's hurting.
You know, it's sad. It's true though. What you're saying is true.
Well, no, that's why I want to teach them that. It is the truth. And it also will, I think, in when those situations, obviously this was like a very light situation. I think he was probably, the kid, he told me the kid, you know, takes the toys and says it's mine, yeah. right? So it's not like a serious bully yet.
Yeah.
But at one point, he's going to have to deal with that. And I want him to come from a place of understanding and empathy. I think he'll handle the situation the better he understands it. When I was a young kid and you had a bully, I never was thinking that many layers.
You didn't think empathy at all.
No, no. He's a jerk. He's an asshole. It turned more into I needed to fight, defend myself, or run and hide. It was more, that was your choices versus having a better understanding of this kid. And so maybe he breaks through and helps that kid, or maybe he knows how to avoid those situations, or at least doesn't internalize them himself, because
that's the big one.
Right. And that's really what I want to come with that. But you just reminded me that, because that just happened last night.
That's so cute. he was so cute when you came in with him yesterday where you came in.
Yeah.
A little sweet boy.
He's walking in, it was sprinkling. Daddy, the rain's messing up my beautiful hair.
No, he didn't.
He
said my beautiful hair.
He said my beautiful hair. I said, bro, your hair's not even done. It's like you didn't even put gel in it. Beautiful hair.
Does he put gel in his hair?
He doesn't. We do.
Does he like for you to do that?
He knows that's part of his routine of getting ready for school.
Bro, my son, Aurelius, to wash his hair is a battle. He doesn't like water on his head at all.
Well, Max still doesn't like going underwater or whatever, but we've gotten better about that, but he doesn't like being underwater. That's an area that I'm going to be challenged with, right? So this year, hopefully we get the swim lessons. COVID thing really fucked that for me.
Yeah.
Because
doing it.
Yeah. And then we haven't. And boy, do I see a difference.
No, we laid on thick now. So when he lets me wash his hair, because you have to, right? At some point, then everybody goes up to him, oh, your hair smells so nice. Yeah. I love your hair. I'm like, everybody say something. We're going to get this cured.
Yeah. Dude, it was so nice when I had a say in their haircuts, you know, and like now, like Ethan is completely like
he's doing the mullet. The
rails, right? Oh, I saw
Katrina said something about that.
And you can't obviously, it gets to that point where you
pick and choose your battles.
Yeah, you realize
who cares?
Like, he's an individual, he's gonna express himself how he's gonna express himself, but it's like literally, bro, like. Do you want to look like a meme? Like, you know, do you want to look like that? Like that depiction.
That's the style for the kids.
But that's the thing. It's popular. It's like his friends, and so I have to like kind of step back and be like, okay, but this is a different culture. Like they have their own little culture.
I think if every dad can control their kids' hair, their son's hair, 99% of us would shave it. That's what I think.
We'll just keep it real short and tight.
I love that. You know? I would love to buzz cut.
That's what I had that.
Buzz cut my kid's hair super short on the top. I think it looks
just nice totally and faded and tight totally and sharp. And it looked handsome.
I was so excited.
That's because you're living vicariously.
I was so excited. I'm probably not like a lot of dads. Maybe more like the moms in the situation. Like I was so excited to get his first haircut, to put his first outfit together. Like I like that stuff. I care more about that than Katrina. Like I'm particular.
Do you pick out his outfits then when you guys go out and stuff?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that part.
You didn't have dolls when you were a kid, huh? Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, seriously, why not?
I was into that stuff. So,
dressing him, like dressing himself.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So like you match him to like you guys.
Sometimes he'll match me. Yeah, sometimes I don't go out of the way to really try and do that, but sometimes that happens where I'm like,
bro, that's together. So cute. I had no idea.
I love to put together his outfits. So, I mean, if he comes here and I didn't get him ready in the morning, then it was his mom and him. But
I'm the worst with that, dude.
I
grab whatever.
I mean, Katrina will tell you, like, if we go somewhere public and she didn't take the time to do that, I'm like, come on, dude. Like,
you say so?
Yeah, yeah. So she does. She's good about, like, that's if she so brings cute. Him around, that she knows that, like,
well, I'll you know what I like? Something. So now my youngest, my little 15-month-old, her hair is starting to grow. It's growing slowly, but it's starting to grow. She's got these little curls in the back, which is
oh cute.
Oh, we are like, oh god, if she can have curly hair. I always wanted a curly hair little girl. But anyway, her hair is just long enough now where Jessica put two little tiny sprouts of pigtails.
Oh
yeah, dude, just send me pictures.
That's so cute. Little fountains coming out.
Oh, that's the cutest thing ever. I want to say something. Shilajit back in stock with Organifi. That blew out.
Yeah. Not for long. I mean, every time they put it back up, it's like psh, gone.
People absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. So people will comment on it, say, I feel amazing. I definitely notice a difference, whatever. And then they like the taste. That's got to be right now one of their biggest blockbuster products.
It is. It's funny.
And for people who don't know what this is, just do this. Google Shilajit with, so it's a J, Shilajit.
You better spell that.
Studies. So it's S-H-A-L-I.
S-H-A? S-H-I.
No, I'm sorry. S-H-I-L-A-J-I-T. Studies. Look that up. There are a ton of actual studies on Shilajit and how it affects the hormones, muscle growth, mood, like crazy. Yeah.
I think it's a combination of that, that it feels good, with the fact that it's in a gummy form.
That tastes
I just
good.
Think that
of course.
Yeah, and it does, and it's like, yeah,
the delivery is so much better.
That yeah, way. And it has kind of a, like a black licorice or so taste. No, it's like,
dude, but you're going to be consistent with it. And this matters.
Right? It does matter. I get it. It does. I'm a pill guy, right?
Well, especially with that, because you said this. That's similar to like the adaptogens, where it's like, the more consistent you yes. are with it, the better the yeah. like the compounding effect versus yep. like randomly taking it one time and expecting to feel this like massive yep. difference. It's like take it consistently and you should feel a notice right. difference.
Real quick, if you go to mindpumpl1.com, so what you can do is you can go in, sign up for one of the best certifications around for trainers, especially if you're really into workout programming, biomechanics, developing muscle and strength. It's an incredible certification called Prescript, Jordan Shallow. It's his company. And right as of right now, you should be able to still qualify to come and listen to a live recording and be here live with us as part of it, which was never included before.
So. No, that's something that we're doing. But I also want to point out for the people that can't make it to us in person, there's also a record, or you could do the
virtual.
Yeah, virtual. So he does have two options, obviously.
But I want to meet everybody.
Yeah, yeah, no. Obviously, the in-person one, coming you out. Get to do the live Q&A yeah. with us. You have the you we if you're the first 10, you'll be able to get into the studio and mm-hmm. watch a live recording. And obviously, those ones are is going to be more expensive to be able to come in person and get the training from Jordan. But there is an option if you can't make it in person to still do the live stream with him too. So,
ButcherBox is a company that delivers grass-fed meat, okay, heritage pork, chicken that's raised in ways that are humane, wild-caught fish, all to your door. So you save money and you get healthy meat that tastes good, feels good, and also has a great price. And if you sign up through our link, go to butcherbox.com/mindpump. They'll actually hook you up and let you have your choice of 2 pounds of ground beef, 3 pounds of chicken thighs, or 1 pound of premium steak tips for an entire year included in your box for free, but you have to use the code MINDPUMP. The link is butcherbox.com/MINDPUMP. By the way, that'll also get you $20 off your first box. All right, back to the show.
First question is from GG Pat. Is it okay to work out sore even after 24 to 48 hours rest?
Yes. Here's the interesting thing about soreness. It often indicates that you went too hard in your workout. That being said, when you are sore, now this is barring the extreme, right? You're going to be so extremely sore, you start to get, you know, waste byproducts in the blood that your kidneys can't filter out. Like, this is an extreme case, right? But normal run-of-the-mill muscle soreness, one of the best things you could do is movement. Now, I wouldn't work out hard.
Mm-mm.
That's a bad idea. But what you should do is do a light workout where you're just moving the muscle, feeling it stretch and contract and getting a little bit of a pump. This will actually facilitate recovery. It actually helps the recovery process.
Yeah, the biggest key to that advice right there is modifying the intensity of and still training or still doing, depending on how sore I am. So let's just use the legs, for example, of like, if let's say I squatted mm-hmm. and I overreached and I'm really sore and it's time to, it's the, you know, 2 days later and I'm back to like, say, MAPS anabolic format and I am back to doing another like compound lift for my legs. I'm going to choose to do that exercise. If I'm really, really sore, I might choose to do mobility work. Yeah. If I'm pretty sore and I overreached a little bit, but not so crippling bad that I'm not like I can still get through the movements, I'm going to do like a light, you know, 50% intensity of mm-hmm. that leg exercise that day. So that's the key. And it'll facilitate recovery. It's going to pump more blood, more oxygen, more mm-hmm. nutrients. It's only going to help you recover faster. The mistake that people make is they train still and then they overreach again.
They
and
still go hard.
Yeah, they go hard again. And it's like, now you're not allowing the body to recover at all.
That's why I like rubber bands. I tend to like lean into that yes. a bit more because it's less damaging. But also, too, it just helps kind of facilitate that pump and that blood flow. Yeah, if I'm really sore, I tend to like gravitate towards that, or I'll hold even with the rubber band. I'll like hold poses isometrically. So the rubber bands actually like added resistance with that pose, but it just helps me to relieve a lot of that real tense, like tight, you know, restriction I feel.
No, this is the Trigger Sessions at MAPS Anabolic. You know, do this. You don't just facilitate recovery. Now, all things being appropriate, this actually amplifies muscle growth as well. So if you have a weak body part and you trained it, try this the following day. Get some bands and do some very light therapeutic exercises on that muscle with the bands and get a little bit of a pump. Watch what happens. It actually is it's pretty remarkable. It's like a turbocharger to that muscle building signal.
Next question is from JM Bird 76. I was rewatching some old episodes and you guys were saying how the optimal amount of protein is 0.5 to 0.7 grams per pound of body weight. Now it's 1 gram. Could you explain how and why the number has changed?
So this is what we get for trying to explain nuance versus just statement and sticking right to that. It's like,
well, first
our message is
there's a difference between what research and study says, and there's a difference between what we recommend. There's a reason why we recommend 1 gram, 1 to 1, because it's fucking easy. It's easy, and nice most and people simple. Fall a little short. Mm-hmm. And so if I tell a client, your goal is to be 130 pounds, so let's eat 130 grams of protein. Very easy for him or her to figure that out or remember that. And what I know from experience is most people will have a hard time doing that. They'll probably fall a little short sometimes. And I'm not stressing out because of what the research says is ideal.
Also, we didn't say 0.5 to 0.7. It's 0.6 to 0.8 if you want to be precise. It's true. If you want to be precise.
Mic drop.
Okay, so here's what the data shows. 0.6 to 0.8 pounds grams of protein per pound of body weight in lean individuals is the upper limit of where you're going to see benefits come from with high protein in terms of muscle growth. But there's something that's missing there. There's also the satiety-producing effects of protein that don't show up in those studies. Eating a gram of protein, just a little more, has a much more pronounced satiety-producing effect, which most people benefit from, because one of the biggest challenges to eating right is just you're just hungry or you crave food or you want to eat more. So actually, even if they don't miss this, because what Adam said is true as well, most people won't hit this, so they'll fall within that 0.6 to 0.8. But if they do hit this, what they'll probably do is eat the appropriate amount of calories, because it makes you satisfied. Eating that much protein makes you not want to overeat.
Well, back in the store. Think from a trainer's perspective. Could you imagine your clients trying to do the math of 0.6 or 0.7 grams per lean body mass every time they made a food choice? Like, it's just crazy. It's like easy to just go
120. Yeah. Cool. Four meals divided by four.
It's easy. So that's why you've heard us. We've communicated it. And then there's times when Sal
simplicity wins.
Well, there's times when Sal is, and this is not just this. This is one example of this, where Sal is explaining or regurgitating a study to you guys, and then you hear us give advice, and sometimes the advice isn't exactly what the study says, because we don't always just go off with.
I want the advice to be effective.
That's right.
I don't want the advice to be the study.
We always
the behavioral aspect.
There's behavioral and the psychology of these people that we factor in and experience. And so, yes, there's times where you'll hear us talk about a study, and then you might hear advice that sounds different or maybe in your mind conflicting, but it's not. It's that we're also taking that study, and then we're factoring all the other things that we know from experience, and then we've learned, oh, this is just a better approach, is to give this person this advice. It's not one's wrong or one's right.
Next question is from Nels 144. Is it better to build muscle then lose weight, or lose weight then build muscle?
Well, one of them, if you do it first, will make the second one easier, or the reverse. If you build do it muscle. First, it'll make the second one harder. What makes the second one easier? Or in other words, which one should you do first so that the second option is becomes a lot easier to maintain? Build muscle first.
Yeah.
If you build muscle first, you also now have sped up your metabolism. You now have a higher caloric maintenance, which makes the fat loss later much easier. Now, in the reverse, you go to lose weight first, you're going to probably slow your metabolism down. Now you're going to try to build muscle without gaining the body fat that you just lost. That can be very challenging. It can be done, by the way. You could do the other way around, but I don't know why anybody would want to make it that much harder. By the way, everybody does it the wrong way.
Yeah.
Almost nobody goes and
says... Nobody does this first option.
Nobody says, I want to lose 30 pounds, let me build muscle.
It's such a more enjoyable option. Mm-hmm. If you just look at it like enjoying the process and, you know, like looking forward to your workouts and feeding yourself so you feel like you're actually, you have performance, you have strength. Like
you're hitting on something really incredible there, because if you're just, especially if you're just getting started,
yeah,
working out in a calorie deficit makes the workout suck.
Yeah.
You don't like it as much. You don't have as energetic. It just doesn't feel good.
And your day sucks. You're all day, you're wanting to eat and you feel like you're restricting from.
Yeah. So if you're a new person, doesn't it make sense to start this out in a way so that you can build a relationship with something you enjoy?
Right.
And then later we'll make it suck a little bit.
I mean, this to me, this is a very clear difference between a young early trainer and a very experienced trainer.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. The only trainers I know that do this are ones that have experience, that have had experience, that that have been doing this for a long time, and they get this part. I mean, and I'm guilty of being the other trainer for a long time, right? From first half of my career, if someone came in, they wanted to lose 30, and by the way,
you would calorie deficit them.
A lot of that was operating from scarcity, right? Afraid that I would lose the client if I didn't show them some sort of results right away.
Yep. Yeah.
So even when I started to piece together the understanding and the science that supports why I should build muscle first, I still operated from a place of fear and scarcity that, oh no, if I don't show this client who's paying me all this money to lose 30 pounds, if I can't show them a good 5-10 pounds off.
That's the majority of trainers, right?
It is. And so you got to get past that. And the way you get past that is communicating that better to the client, like what we're talking about right now, why, hey, we want to build muscle first because it's going to make this more enjoyable. It's going to be easier for you when you decide to lose body fat. It is going to be more sustainable afterwards. And so it is the better approach of going this. In fact, it's probably the only approach, because maybe if you only had a little ways to go, you could cut enough calories and move enough just to get there. But boy, is that tough to
sustain. What happens is somebody comes in, wants to lose 30, 40 pounds. They go the lose weight first option. They lose some weight. They plateau. It mm-hmm. sucks. They try harder. It's very hard. What's going on? My body's resisting. Quit. They don't even get to the second part.
Yeah.
But if you do it the other way around, it's different. It's you see results. You feel stronger. Oh my God, everything's moving in the right direction. Then when you cut, you don't hit those plateaus.
The hardest part about doing it the right way, though, is the psychological part.
Of course.
Losing
weight.
A good coach and trainer, that is what you're helping your client with, is you're helping them navigate through the psychological hurdles of, oh my God, we've been working out for a month now and the scale is not moving. It's like, even though that is what you want to see for this weight loss client, because if you've done a good job.
Yeah. Address the difficulty first, though.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. You want to tackle that head on so you set them up for success versus having to address all of that later on. You're in a hole.
Next question is from Lindsay Wondove. What are the pros and cons of a shoulder versus elbow rack on a front squat?
So, Justin, do they mean, is an elbow rack a Zercher?
No, it means this.
Yeah, I know, because I was thinking Zercher too, but no.
Oh, so that's the bodybuilder style.
This is the bodybuilder style. You
have poor shoulders. Across the shoulders.
Yeah, there's a difference. One of them means you got poor shoulder mobility.
Shoulder and wrist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as the front squat and the muscles targeted are concerned, it doesn't matter, right? They both hit the lower body exactly the same. The elbow rack position, like what you would see like a weightlifter do with the fingertips under the bar, elbows up, that's a higher skill form of a front squat.
It's a precursor. It's really, it's an in-between. You want to be able to get and achieve that in order to then transition into something like a jerk press, you know, from there. Right. And so it's like, it's setting you up.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of setting you up with Olympic lifts. If I want to make that point. So it's kind of like one of those in-betweener moves, like the muscle up, for instance, for like gymnasts. So
it's also like somebody elevating their heels to squat deeper. I mean, if you can't get past 90 degrees without elevating your heels, there's obviously something there. There's a mobility issue there, right? We lack ankle mobility that allows to do that. But if all you care about is building the quads and the glutes and you want to get a deeper squat,
you want to just do a leg workout,
right? And do a leg workout, then yeah, sure. Squat shoes are fine. But if you have to do it that way, the con of that is that it's telling you that there is a limiting factor there. You limit the wrist or shoulder mobility. And so, okay, from a muscle standpoint, it doesn't really matter much, but from a general health, mobility, like you should address that.
It is a high skill movement though. Like the average person, getting them to support a barbell in the shoulder, like the bodybuilder style, is hard enough. That's even hard for people. Getting them to learn how to hold it in that rack position. I never taught a client how to do that because the skill required and the training required just to get the barbell into position, we didn't see tons of benefit in the sense that it prevented us from doing a front squat. So I always taught this way. Now, if I know in the future we're going to learn how to do a clean, then you want to learn that because how are you going to get the, how are you going to hold the bar up in your shoulders?
You're
going
to be able to catch it appropriately.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise you throw the bar up and catch it with your teeth.
Oh, interesting. See, I would, to regress that, early on, I would probably fold my arms. Now to regress that, I would probably use straps or a towel.
Yeah.
I would still teach the
pinch
front
grip. You know,
yeah, I would teach the front rack position, and then I just allow them to roll towels or wrist.
I did that too,
and to hold it just to teach that position. You know, to be able to do that. But to me, as a coach and a trainer, if my client can't do that, and I see that it's because their wrist can't break enough, or they can't keep their elbows up because of their lack of shoulder mobility. To me, that's the big thing to take away from as a coach is like, oh, okay, there's some work to be done.
Now, if they're talking about Zercher, that's
like, very different.
Yeah, very different exercise.
Oh yeah. Oh, I guess we don't have clarity on if that's what.
Yeah. So just to bring that up because. I mean, you get a lot of benefit from that too, like for anterior reasons, but also your core is very much more activated, and that's going to isolate that.
You
quite
get
a bit.
More glutes with a Zercher position just because the lever is a little longer. As you squat down, you're going to use more of that extension.
The load's more centric.
More centric.
Oh, I didn't even read it that way. I guess it could be
right.
Yeah, yeah. No, I guess it could be asking
because a Zercher squat.
It's a different exercise.
Well, and it's also very functional.
Yeah.
Because you'd
hold something heavy down.
Yeah,
here.
You're holding something up in front of you. Something's not on your back.
Even, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, those are different exercises. I thought we were discussing the difference between the front rack and then the crossed arms, but that makes. I think you're talking about two different exercises. Then they're different. You can't. It's like comparing the front squat to a back squat. It's like they're different movements.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Even though squat is in the name.
Yep.
Look, if you like Mind Pump, head over to mindpumpfree.com and check out all of our free fitness guides. We have guides that can help you with almost any health or fitness goal. You can also find us on social media. Justin is on Instagram at mindpumpjustin. I'm on Instagram at mindpumpdestefano, and Adam is on Instagram at mindpumpadam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.